It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the New York Yankees official podcast.
The two that I've probably taken the most from are Joe Torre and Phil Garner. When I played for Joe in Los Angeles, I was at the end of my career. I was 40 years old. So I really kind of focused on how Joe did things, and Joe took the time to explain things to me if I had questions. I was there for 5.5 years in the Yankees minor leagues. We won, I think, 3 championships along the way. I won in rookie ball, one in double A, and one in triple A. Made a lot of very good friends. I think as a player, you look at the bench coach as maybe a go-between. If there's a concern on a player's part or even an issue, the bench coach can be a sounding board or a conduit for the player to the manager, and also can be a conduit from the manager to the players as well. So it does go in both directions.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the New York Yankees official podcast. I'm John Schwartz. I'm the deputy editor for Yankees Magazine. Joining me across the Zoom line, we have our editor-in-chief, Al Sanasiri. How are you, Al?
I'm good. Hi, John.
How are you? We have a pretty cool episode today. We have an interview that our coworker, Nate, who's not with us today because he's on assignment somewhere else right now, but he did with new Yankees bench coach, Brad Ausmus.
Yeah, it's a great interview. I'm really excited about this hire. I think that, you know, Brad Ausmus has had a really great career in baseball. He reminds me a lot of some of the, you know, the really most hardworking coaches we've had here over the last couple of years with the Yankees. A guy who's just been in the game forever, worked his way up the ranks, done a lot, and, you know, kind of gives you the sense that he's going to be a really valuable part of this team from the coaching staff in 2024.
So that's a fun conversation. Then Al, in our second segment today, why don't we just discuss a little bit about what we see moving forward? Obviously, you know, a lot of things still in flux right now, but it is still a decent time to be starting to maybe, you know, read some tea leaves. So stick with us.
Joining us today over Zoom is the newest member of the Yankees coaching staff, bench coach Brad Ausmus. Brad, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Nate.
Maybe just kind of, you know, set the scene a little bit for us today in the present day. Where are you calling from? Where is home for you? And what's a typical, you know, December afternoon day look like for you, Brad?
I am actually in the San Diego area in Southern California. I've kind of been in the San Diego area since I played with the Padres back in the mid-90s. So I put roots down here, raised 2 daughters here. They are now out of the house, however. But we just never left Southern California. So that's where we are. And a typical December afternoon isn't overly exciting, to be honest with you. It's not a lot going on.
Well, that sounds like an awfully nice place to be. We got some, it's about 40 degrees and gray and rainy here in the New York area. So I'm sure it's a little better over there.
It is a little, we got some sun, and it's a little cool by San Diego standards. It's, you know, right around 60, low 60s, but it's certainly not quite as cold as it is in the city.
Very nice. Very nice. So 1987, the June amateur draft, you're drafted by the New York Yankees in the 48th round. What do you remember from that day?
The draft environment has changed now these days. A lot of players are very aware that they're going to get drafted. I was not very aware. I was aware that the draft was going on. And the 48th round, which they don't even have that many rounds anymore, but the 48th round didn't take place until the third day of the draft. So I actually hadn't thought twice about it in probably 48 hours. And I was at a friend's house hanging out like teenagers do. And my mother called the house and told me that the Yankees had called. So it kind of shocked me. I was very surprised. I was what they call a draft and follow. So they drafted me And back then they had until the following draft or until I stepped foot on my college campus to begin classes, they hadn't until then to sign me. So I was at what they call a draft and follow. They drafted me in June. They were going to watch me play summer ball and then make a decision on what, if any, type of offer to make me before I left for college.
Were the Yankees on your radar? Had you been talking to a scout from the team, or was it just completely a shock?
No, it wasn't a shock. I had actually been to Yankee Stadium for a pre-draft workout. So Brian Sabian was the scouting director. I remember talking to him down in the Yankee dugout. So no, they were definitely on the radar. But like I said, it was the third day of the draft and I had kind of stopped thinking about it.
So they draft you, and like you said, draft and follow. You were at Dartmouth, right?
Well, I was a senior in high school when I was drafted. So I was in Connecticut in high school. And then when they drafted me in June, they had until I started classes at Dartmouth, which was third week of September, to sign me. So like I said, they followed me all summer and then made an offer before I left for college.
I see. So you get into the minor leagues there with the Yankees in the late 80s, early 90s, a time in Yankees history when the major league on-field product was not so great, but there were some very good years coming in the near future. What kind of stands out to you from your time in the minor leagues with the organization? Did you cross paths with any of the guys that became part of the dynasty a few years later? Like, could you start to see the seeds of something special starting to take shape at that point?
I think I was probably a little naive to understanding what was taking shape, but I certainly did cross paths with a lot of the people that became mainstays in the Yankee pinstripes over their successful seasons. I enjoyed my time I was there for 5.5 years in the Yankees minor leagues. We won, I think, 3 championships along the way. I won in rookie ball, one in AA, one in AAA. Made a lot of very good friends. Some of the guys that I played with that would go on to kind of help the Yankees. Bernie Williams was one that I played with. Obviously, Yankee fans know who Bernie is.
Sure.
He and I played together in Columbus in 1992. Actually, that 1992 Columbus Clippers team had a lot of very good players. Bernie Williams was on there. Gerald Williams was on there. JT Snow, who ended up getting traded after the 92 season, was on there. Bob Wickman, who pitched for years, Russ Springer pitched for years. Hensley Mullins, I think, is a name Yankee fans will remember.
Yeah.
Some of the guys like Rivera, Posada, Jeter, they were a year or a level or two behind me at the time. I was a little bit older than they were.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there was a you know, Buck Showalter was the manager 1 year. I think Stump Merrill the year before that. There was a lot of names that a lot of people that Yankee fans would remember.
Yeah, for sure. And so, I mean, did it come as a kind of shock to you when you were taken in the expansion draft? Because I guess, you know, 5.5 years in the Yankee system, you get all the way up to AAA with Columbus. You're knocking on the door there. I guess at that point, you're probably thinking, hey, I'm going to be in Yankee Stadium soon enough. And then next thing you know, it's out to Colorado.
To put it bluntly, I was shocked. I was at college. I when I was in the minors, I was alternating back and forth between playing in the spring and summer with the Yankees in the minor leagues and then going to college classes in the fall and winter. So I was in college and actually watching the draft in my fraternity room, my fraternity bedroom, and was completely shocked to hear my name. You know, all the people doing the broadcast kind of were saying, all right, after the first round, these players were probably protected for the Yankees. And I had been one of those guys that they were assuming had been protected. So when I got taken in the third round, it stunned me. And you know, when you come up with a team through the system from rookie ball all the way to AAA, you just kind of feel like you're going to be with that team. And this, of course, is pre-cell phone. So, the Rockies call my parents at home. They get a hold of me at school and, you know, that becomes official.
Wow. Totally changed the trajectory of your whole career.
Yeah, it certainly did.
All right, so let's dive in a little bit to your new job here. You're back with the Yankees after all these years later. And I'm sure, I mean, anytime anybody starts a new job, you kind of want to just, you know, dive right in and get going. But, you know, here we are in early December. Everybody, you know, everybody's all over the place. I don't know how much there is you can do at this point. What is the, you know, what can you do in these weeks before we get down to Tampa?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing that I've done is kind of get onboarded with the system that the Yankees have, just in terms of how to use their database system, their informational system. You know, I have to get my email address and all that. So that's been happening recently. In addition, talking to Booney about kind of nailing down exactly what my role is, what areas I'm going to be covering in spring training during the course of the season. And that's obviously an ongoing discussion that is really just beginning to take shape, what my roles will be, what my job will be, et cetera. So some things are apparent, other things are kind of still being decided. But yeah, I've been relatively busy since the contract has been agreed to, quite frankly.
So I know when you first met with the reporters, you said that you know Booney a little bit from, you know, having been on in the opposite dugout for many years. Is there anybody else in the organization that you know that you've worked with in the past or anything like that?
I don't think so. I know Mike Harkey a little bit as well, kind of similar to Booney, mm-hmm. being in the opposite dugout and crossing paths and talking occasionally. And I know Luis Rojas a little bit as well. But that's probably it on the staff. Brian Cashman, I've known for years. He was with the Yankees when I was in the minor leagues. He and I kind of started with the organization around the same time. I might have beat him by a year or two, but he was there shortly after.
Well, those are all good guys to know.
I guess.
So, bench coach, it's a role that you've held before with Oakland. But, you know, thinking back to your playing days, you know, what in your mind makes a good one? You know, what did you kind of look toward your bench coaches for when you were a player?
I think as a player, you look at the bench coaches, maybe a go-between to the manager, you know, someone that if there's a concern on a player's part or even an issue, the bench coach can be a sounding board or a conduit for the player to the manager. And also can be a conduit from the manager to the players as well. So it does go in both directions. But I think mainly players look at the bench coach as someone they might be able to go to without having to bother the manager about something.
Mm-hmm. Right. Brad, you've had such a long career in this game, and I'm sure you've had a ton of managers and coaches that have been, you know, influential for you. Is there one or two guys that were the most impactful guys that you maybe have, you know, taken some of their philosophy or their way of doing things and incorporated that into the way you manage or coach players?
I think you take bits and pieces from coaches and managers that cross your path throughout your career. But the two that I've probably taken the most from are Joe Torre and Phil Garner. When I played for Joe in Los Angeles, I was at the end of my career. I was 40 years old. And at that point, I was a backup catcher, and I was starting to look at the game a little differently, more from a coaching / managerial perspective. So I really kind of focused on how Joe did things, and Joe took the time to explain things to me if I had questions. And Phil Garner was similar in the sense that he would actually have me come stand next to him at times when I wasn't playing in Houston and ask me questions or talk me through something.
Is the goal with the manager, with you and between you and Booney, is it to be of one mindset, or is it kind of more beneficial if you have, as a bench coach, you have sort of different perspectives and ideas that you can present him with?
I think we'll probably jive most of the time, but the most important thing for the bench coach with the manager is to be honest. If I disagree with something that he's considering, I have to tell him I disagree with it. I need to let him know. He needs to hear that other opinion. If he's just got a yes man sitting next to him, that's not doing anybody, including the rest of the Yankees, any good.
Right. I kind of chuckled when you told the reporters you were sort of bored this past summer. Just, you know, how excited are you about next season being able to be back in uniform, back in the dugout, you know, everything that goes along with it, spring training, road trips, all that good stuff. Just how excited are you for all that?
I'm very excited to be part of the Yankees, quite frankly. It's probably, you know, it's the most storied organization in baseball history. And I was there as a minor leaguer, but never as a major leaguer, although I got to enjoy a couple major league spring training camps. So I was fired up when Booney called and offered me the job. And at that point, it's just a matter of doing a contract with Cashman, which probably took all of about 15 minutes, quite frankly. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be busy. We certainly got work to do. I know it was not a Yankee year by Yankee standards last season, but I think everyone expects the Yankees to contend next year, and I'm hoping to be part of that contender.
Yeah. Brad, as a guy who has spent his entire life in this game, being from the Northeast, from Connecticut, like you said, what do the Yankee pinstripes just sort of represent to you? I don't know if you were a fan of the team growing up at all or anything, but just, you know, knowing what you do, having been ensconced in the sport for as long as you have, you know, what is the franchise kind of represented to you?
I mean, just the Yankee emblem is kind of iconic. It's not just a baseball emblem or logo. It's, you see it everywhere. You see it around the globe. The history of the baseball club itself is unmatched. It's unrivaled in terms of World Series championships. And now, of course, expectation. You have expectation. You have the grandest stage in baseball. And man, it'd be great to hoist a World Series trophy. That I've never done that in my career with any organization. I'd love to do it in 2024.
There's no place like winning in New York, that's for sure. You know, we talked about some of the managers that have been influential for you. I mean, you've been around a ton of great players as well as a coach. I mean, you've had Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani and Miguel Cabrera. From those experiences, you know, what have you learned about managing those types of guys, like the game's superstars, that you think, you know, could be helpful when you get down to Tampa and you're you know, now in charge of, you know, managing a team or coaching a team with guys like Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole on it?
You know, I mentioned this the other day. There's nothing greater than an all-star or even Hall of Fame caliber player that is also a great teammate. And guys like Trout, Miguel Cabrera, Max Scherzer, these are guys that I've managed, and they're all great teammates, and they're just fun to be around. Not just because they're performing, but even when they're not performing, they're fun to be around. You want them in that clubhouse with you. You want to hang out with them and talk to them during batting practice. And by all accounts, and Booney has reiterated this to me, Judge falls into that category. So I don't know Aaron Judge. I'm looking forward to meeting him, and I'm going to like him because he seems like he's one of those great player, great teammate type guys.
Well, Brad, you've answered all the questions on my list for you. So I'll leave it with this. Do you have any good stories from your Yankee minor league playing days that you would like to share with our audience?
my Yankee minor league playing. Wow. I'm going to really have to go into the vault to find one of those.
I know it's going way back now.
Yeah, it's been, it's been 30 years, I guess now, since over 30 years.
Was the Deion Sanders wasn't around when you were in the minors, were you?
I did play with Deion. So when Deion signed, it was 1988. I was playing in Sarasota, Florida in rookie ball. And I didn't really follow college football, so I didn't know who Deion Sanders was. But this guy starts walking towards the field with about, I don't know, 7 or 8 media members around him. I said to one of them, my teammates, said, "Who's this guy?" They said, "Deion Sanders." I said, "Who's Deion Sanders?" They explained it to me. And he played. He didn't stick around in Sarasota that long, but he did play with us. And the one thing I remember about Deion is he hit a routine ground ball to the second baseman and beat it out.
Wow.
It still stands out as a vivid memory. But he beat out a routine ground ball to the second baseman, the closest infielder to first base.
That's awesome. Well, Brad, thank you so much for your time today. This is a lot of fun, and I'm excited to meet you when we get down to Tampa, and looking forward to a great season.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Nate.
Hi, this is Anthony Volpe. You're listening to the New York Yankees official podcast.
Hi, this is Tommy Canely. You're listening to the New York Yankees official podcast.
Welcome back to the New York Yankees official podcast. Al, I think you said it in the intro there. You listen to Nate and Brad talk, and it's pretty clear what the Yankees see in this guy.
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, his baseball acumen is high. His work ethic is strong. Everywhere he's been, he's kind of been praised for the type of work that he's done. You know, I like that he's a former catcher. He certainly knows, you know, the game, not just from a hitting perspective, but from working with so many pitchers and, you know, is, you know, really outward about how that benefits him. And, you know, it's just a logical guy to come in and replace a coach who, you know, in a lot of ways did a really great job here and who I kind of see similarities in.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, Carlos Mendoza, much like Rob Thompson before him, you know, these aren't coaches that just are guys who are there to check some boxes and they're interchangeable. It's a real piece of personality and doggedness and motivation and all these things, because the bench coach job, it's amorphous in some ways. You know, what's a good bench coach? I guess it's a bench coach on a team that wins World Series, but, you know, more specifically, it's a guy who takes a lot of weight off the manager, who's able to handle the scheduling, who's able to handle the planning, who's able to be, as Brad Ausmus said, you know, a guy who can handle some, you know, conversations with the players when the player maybe doesn't, you know, want to elevate it or escalate it to the level of the manager, all these things. You have to do so much. I mean, and we would laugh. We would tell stories at spring training about, you know, someone leaving spring training the night before. And as they were leaving, like, Rob Thompson was showing up for work the next day because he was just always, always at GMS Field. Carlos Mendoza was the same way. And, you know, you listen to Nate and Brad Ausmus talk, and this is a guy who has a life in this game and who's understands this game. And I think he's going to be a real asset.
I agree with you. And it's funny you brought up Rob Thompson. I was talking to a friend earlier and I brought up the same comparison, a guy who worked his way up the ranks. Obviously, Brad had a career as a player, but not just in the majors, in the minors as well. And guys who, yeah, are not afraid to work, you know, maybe outwork everybody on the staff just because that's the type of responsibilities they're given, you know, not because other guys are not working as hard or don't want to work as hard, but their responsibilities are so wide ranging, so far reaching, so diverse. And he's a guy who's, you know, who's succeeded in this role. He's done it before. And it's so hard to think of how this could have gone any better. I'll say that much from a hiring standpoint to this point.
It's interesting, too, because if you look back, and obviously here we are, it's the first full week of December. Most of the baseball world right now is focusing on the winter meetings. Of course, I'm sure since we're recording this now, by the time this runs, there will have been massive, massive player movement and things like that that you're not getting from us in this episode. So we are going back to last week, though. And one of the things that happened last week was Ausmus meeting with the media. And I think it's funny still because, God, I mean, we're like, you know, just around the corner now from 2024. And you hear whenever there's a manager or a front office staff or anything like this, somehow we start fighting the wars of 2004 again, where it's like, well, is it analytics or is it scouting or is it this or is it this and is it this? And I just find it funny. I find it funny that everyone has to, you know, get to their, you know, corner in a sense and decide which side of this fight they're going to be on. I think Brad Ausmus is a guy who has experience as a player, has experience as, I mean, really smart guy, as we've seen over the years. Brad Ausmus understands the numbers. Brad Ausmus understands, you know, what it takes to be a successful major leaguer and what it takes to be a successful major league manager, too, to some degree. So I don't know. I don't know. I find it funny, I guess, just why that is always the conversation. Is this a scouting hire or an analytics hire? And what's the difference? Whatever. I mean, I don't know. I just feel like, doesn't everyone understand that everything in baseball is all of the above at this point? Like, that there is no one side or the other?
Yeah, I mean, analytics are a part of the game. They're a part of the Yankees organization and operation. It starts with Brian Cashman, but it ends, you know, at home plate when the guy gets up to the plate, and everything in between that is Aaron Boone, now Brad Ausmus, other coaches, And there's a real, great coaching staff that's in place. You know, Aaron Boone's won a lot of games in his tenure here, and he's had great coaches come through here that have worked for him. Look at the track record of guys who are elsewhere and having success. Same thing with, the staff that Joe Girardi had here prior to Aaron. This is just an extension of that, or an addition to that, where a great coach is here. He has a great, strong grasp of analytics, but he's also got a real feel for the game because he was a player. He was a player who struggled. He was a player who succeeded. He's an all of the above type of guy, if you will, and someone who I think will do it all. And when you say do it all for a bench coach, it's a lot.
And look, I mean, Aaron Boone, Brad Ausmus, Luis Rojas Jr. I mean, you have a lot of guys with a lot of experience on this coaching staff right now. A lot of guys, Luis Rojas Jr., he was a manager for only 2 years, but
he was a manager.
His life story, though, I mean, is literally what I think he's been breathing baseball since, before the days he was born with a father like Felipe Alou. Obviously, Brad Ausmus, long career in the game, been a manager, but it goes even a little bit further than that, because one thing I loved hearing him talk about is, and maybe it's just a smart guy who knows what to say to the Yankees, but who did he most revere, most respect, most learn from as a manager? Well, how about a guy named Joe Torre? Oh, yeah, that name goes pretty far in these parts. That's right. A good name to mention in your interview, if you will. So I think it's a staff that has really been through a lot. I mean, I think you're going to find very few bullpen coaches who have been through more than Mike Harkey. Certainly it just, there's a lot of talent all around Aaron Boone, and that trickles down, that has an impact on the players on that roster.
I agree. And I think another thing that's important, when you talk about kind of the effect that a bench coach has on a roster. First of all, let me backtrack a second. Anybody who models themselves or learns from Joe Torre is somebody I'm a fan of. He's still the most, influential manager I've ever worked with from a publications department standpoint, which, there's interactions with managers, that we have in terms of interviewing them, being around them, hearing them talk about the game, and really hearing the way that they manage people. And no one, I thought, did that better than Joe Torre of any coach or manager I've been around, or even been a fan of. So I think it's really smart that he kind of recognized those things in Joe. And another person who's also said that is Aaron Boone, who, although he didn't play for Joe for a long time, he definitely talks about the things that he picked up that were significant. So that's awesome. I also think that, when you look back at a guy like Carlos Mendoza, who was here, left to become a manager, obviously with a Major League Baseball team, he wasn't somebody who is being replaced because he wasn't doing a good job or because he was fired or something like that.
Or wasn't absolutely beloved in the organization.
Or wasn't absolutely beloved in the organization. I think it's crucial that the team brought in someone who is kind of equal to him in terms of experience, in terms of acumen, in terms of relating with players and being all of those things, and the scheduling and the organizational responsibilities and et cetera, et cetera. Not that it would have been okay, like, if the predecessor was doing a horrible job and he was replaced by another guy who was going to do a horrible job. But in this case, there was a big reliance on Carlos Mendoza and those responsibilities, and that just kind of, if you will, star power of a bench coach and all the things that he did needed to be replaced by somebody who could kind of step into those shoes and fill those shoes. And it sure as heck seems like we got the guy that can do that.
It seems like it. Sure. I mean, who knows, at the end of the day. As long as the trains run on time during spring training, I guess that means that a bench coach is doing the job. So I think everyone has every reason to expect that. The reality is, of course, that the much more important things there are still to come this offseason, not to say that the filling out the coaching staff, which the Yankees have now basically done, is not important. But I mean, look, everyone's right to be focusing on the news coming out of Nashville at the winter meetings and what this means and everything like that. And I could just say, first off, as always, again, maybe you're hearing this and you know more than we do right now. You almost definitely know more than we do right now because things move pretty fast this time of year. It's just such a weird time, though, because I'm sitting there. I know you are, too. We're thinking about the stories we're going to be working on. We're thinking about the players we're going to be writing about. And there are just these caveats, like, unless, well, maybe. It's like, I have this guy I want to write about. If he's still here, I have this guy I want to write about. Who knows? And I know that you've been doing this. I've been doing this. I think combined, we're probably in this industry some, like, 45 years or something like that.
Yeah.
It still is a little jarring when you realize you're talking about human beings in this way, though. And I always try to pull myself back from that a little bit of just looking at them as chess pieces. But this time of year, I hate to say it, they kind of are. It's not the noblest part of our profession. But, you know, I do try to remember as you're hearing rumors and as you're seeing tweets and as you're, you know, there's usually a wife or a kid or, you know, family member that's being impacted by that,
or a dream. And you know, and you're right, 100%. I'll say this, I have served 0 days as a general manager, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that. One of them is that I am too soft. It would be really hard for me to trade a player who I liked and who worked really, really, really hard to realize his dream as a New York Yankee, or worked really hard to be the best New York Yankee he could be. Brian Cashman doesn't operate like that, and that is by no means a criticism. If anything, it's a criticism of me, you know, if you will. But, you know, there's no, you know, there's, it's just a different job than the ones we have or anyone else. You know, if we're doing our jobs, the Yankees aren't looking to replace us. At least I hope they're not, but that's the way it is. I remember just, you know, last summer doing, you know, similar kind of feeling I had doing a story with Harrison Bader, where you talked about his days at University of Florida. And he's like, every month we were evaluated and every month players were getting cut from the team. And I mean, every month, like January, February, November, even non-baseball months, if you will. And same thing goes, you know, so yeah, there is a real human nature to it. I know you've done stories with guys that you've then kind of begun to like a lot personally. And I've had those same feelings. And it's like, man, I don't want to see this guy go. He's working his butt off and he's a good player and he's a good guy and he represents the Yankees so well. I was heartbroken when Curtis Granderson moved on because I thought, boy, no one represented the Yankees the way that he did. But that's not what he's there to do. I mean, that's great. Don't get me wrong. But if there's a better outfielder, yeah, it doesn't matter.
That's the price. That's the life. And these guys all signed up for it. It's hard.
It's hard, but who knows what's going to happen. You're right. I mean, we are right in the middle of that unknown period right now. It is so uncertain. There's so many big fish out there that are exciting to think about. There are players here who I hope don't go anywhere. Obviously, the logic that you have to give something up to get something good. You know, that's fortunate and unfortunate, I guess. But it's going to be an exciting, whatever, 2 or 3 weeks coming up.
That's the way it goes. And maybe it's full circle, too, because the guy who we're chatting with in this episode, you know, he got that call, too, where he thought he was about to become a major leaguer with the New York Yankees. And instead, he's picked in the expansion draft. It's just, you never know. It's a tough part of life. But hopefully, you know, we get to have some pretty happy people pretty soon. Fans are always demanding. Fans earn the right, in a sense, to be demanding. After a disappointing season, you knew that fans were going to be clamoring for something, and you expect that now that we're in December, you know, you expect stuff to start happening pretty soon, and it'll be interesting. And look, we're not fans per se, you know, we're employees. But we watch just as closely, and we check our phones just as often as all those other people. And I promise you, these next few days and weeks, we'll definitely be doing that.
Yeah, it's exciting. Every time I do check my phone or check into any, you know, these days, you know, just being awake means that you're going to find out news somehow. Your heart kind of beats a little bit faster because you're waiting to see. And, you know, it's going to be an exciting time. And I really look forward to the next episode, recording the next episode, because it might be a really interesting topic that we're talking about. Who knows?
Al, with that, why don't we just say goodbye for this one? And obviously, like you said, next time we come back, I imagine we're going to have some more news for you. But in the meantime, have a great couple of weeks, and may your Christmas stocking be filled with some interesting players, I guess.
Absolutely.
Cheers to you.
Thank you for listening to the New York Yankees official podcast. For more stories like these, be sure to subscribe at yankees.com/podcast. And for the most in-depth coverage of your New York Yankees, subscribe to Yankees Magazine at yankees.com/publication. Thanks for listening, and go Yankees!
The New York Yankees official podcast is a production of the Yankees Magazine Podcast Network. It's produced by me, John Schwartz, with assistance from the entire team at Yankees Magazine, as well as incredible support from the New York Yankees Media Relations Department, in particular Jason Zillow, Michael Margolis, and Caitlin Brennan. Thanks also to our awesome social media team, Ryan Callahan, Julia Shore, and Alex King. If you're not subscribed, what are you waiting for? We're available wherever you listen to your podcasts or at yankees.com/podcasts. Leave us a review, leave us a rating. You can even send us your thoughts over email, podcasts@yankees.com. For more information about the stories we discussed today, visit yankees.com/magazine, where you can read all of our long-form content. If you'd like to subscribe to Yankees Magazine or purchase individual copies of the magazine, yearbook, media guide, or anything else, please visit yankees.com/publications or call us at 800-GO-YANKS. Of course, you can also stay up to date on everything happening here at the stadium by following us on Twitter @YanksMagazine or by liking us on Facebook @YankeesMagazine. That's it. See you next time, and go Yanks!